Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to awaken to the truth of your soul? Welcome to today's episode of the Nadia Khalil Morning Show with your host, Nadia Khalil.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to today's show. Today is January 5th. It's Friday. We're already a week into the new year, almost. But it's cool. It was like a short week this week. But I hope you guys are all doing great. You're enjoying the new year. You're kind of coming along to where you think you wanted to be at this time. I hope so. It's always fun to do what you say you want to do. That's always a cool thing to do. So welcome. I've got three big questions, so I'm going to get to them right away. So let's get started. My first question is anonymous, and it says, recently, an amazing woman came onto me. I'm blinded by this a lot, only because I parent and work a lot. In retrospect, I realized this woman would be a great fit for me, but it's hard for me to get in touch with her. I wrote an email to her, and there's no way of knowing she will actually receive it. I feel bad that I didn't respond to her advancements, meaning I didn't ask her out on a date. Actually, I didn't know what to say as I was working and didn't want to be inappropriate. My question to you, and you mentioned this a lot during the last few shows, but could you explain how good is this taking action in pursuit of a relationship for my soul? For example, in the email, I asked her out. She only lives 2-3 blocks away from me, but she works a lot and might not even get the email. Love to you, Nadia, and thanks in advance. I'm trying not to, but I feel like a knucklehead. I was so attracted to her as well. Her relationship of 16 years ended over a year ago. We have so much in common. Okay, so for some reason, every time we are attracted to somebody, everything we do is like huge. When it's just somebody we know, we'll pick up the phone and talk to them, or we will run into them. Or maybe, if she only lives 2-3 blocks away, stop by. But because there's an attraction there and everyone's scared of doing something wrong or something that is maybe very vulnerable or exposing, every little thing we do is big, whether it's how we looked at each other, whether or not we looked at each other, all these things start taking on a life of their own. It's really interesting that, okay, you sent her an email. If you sent me an email, let's say, you wouldn't be wondering, did she get it or not? And if a couple of days went by, you might email me again. And by the way, I always appreciate that because sometimes I get so many, I don't see them right away. So here you go, and now you're coming up with, okay, well, she didn't answer. Well, okay, so what could be wrong? Well, maybe she didn't get my email. Well, maybe this. Well, now I can't go and try again because and say, hey, you know what? I sent you an email. Maybe you didn't see it, and I would love to go out with you. You know, you could do that if you wanted to. You have, and this is something I think is the coolest thing about relationships, especially when the relationship is just starting. It's fun. These stories are fun because you have nothing to lose. You already don't have that person in your life. And if you work from the heart, like say you saw her, or say you stopped by, her car was there, and you just said, hey, you know what? I sent you an email. I know what happened last year, and for some reason it wasn't meant to happen yet, but I've been thinking about you, and would you like to go to dinner? What do you have to lose? It's really very interesting how when we just do the normal things, then the normal things happen, like you go out on a date. But when we are scared and we're not sure how to feel, we're not sure how someone else feels about us. We don't want to assume that they like us, so we try to kind of put it, you know, where it's on a back burner, and we kind of think about it in our heads, and we make it bigger in our heads, And the bigger it is in our heads, because now we're so invested, it becomes really hard to do. But when you say taking action, you did take action. You sent an email. You didn't get a response, but if you sent it to her email address, she probably got the email. And she may have been busy. It might have made her really feel good that you were thinking of her. For some reason, she didn't answer you yet. But sometimes when someone is persistent, we feel like, oh, now they're going to think, you know, I'm stalking them, or I'm, or they say, wow, they really, really liked me. You never know, because you don't know the person well enough to gauge what's going to come back to you. But you did take action, and if she only lives 2-3 blocks away and you drive by and she's there and it's a normal time of day, not too early, not too late, you can stop by and say, hey, you know, I know I sent you an email. You may or may not be interested, but I wanted to stop by and say hello. And if you are interested, I would love to take you to dinner. Just the truth. It always works, believe it or not. When you wonder how two people got together, the other one just asked the other one. The one asked the other. But in the beginning, that person's a normal person like you, but we make them these supernatural people because we want something from them. We want them. We want to get to know them. But how do we do that when we don't know each other? But you guys have a spark. But now there's other things. If a lot of time went by, she may or may not be in another relationship. But usually if they are, they'll answer you in the email. They'll answer you and say, hey, you know what? Thanks for thinking of me. I'm in a relationship now. And then you're like, oh, okay, well, yeah, all right, thanks. But it's a probably good thing that you didn't take her advances right away, because she did get out of a very long-term relationship, and this has given her time to grow and you time, because sometimes when you get somebody right out of a relationship, you become the rebound, and then they realize, hey, wait a minute, I'm just not ready to be with anybody, and boom, they're gone. And you don't want to put yourself in that position as well. So keep that in mind. There's always a reason for everything. And you were not thrown into that situation for whatever reason, whether you were busy, whether you were working, whether you thought it was inappropriate. It wasn't time. And this is where the rubber meets the road on trust. Because you have to trust that at the end of every day, it ends as it should. When somebody is meant to be with you, they're going to be with you. They just are. They're not even going to know why. Sometimes it's a situation that just shows up at your door and you don't even know how you got there and you're like, holy cow, I'm being swept away. And other times it's something you want for years. And nothing happens because it wasn't yours. It wasn't yours. So you have to be willing in these situations to face the reality that this can go either way. Because when it can go either way, you're more objective about how you approach it. About how you would approach it. Also think, if someone sent me an email and told me they were interested in me and I didn't respond, how would I feel if they showed up at my door? Or how would I feel if they sent me a second email? Because that would give you a pretty good insight as to how somebody else will feel. Maybe she didn't answer the first one. Maybe she thought she was going to get back to it. And then the second time she gets, she's like, wow, sorry, I haven't responded right away. Boom, she responds. Or she might say, hey, you know what, because, you know, she knows you. So she'll say things like, hey, you know, hopefully we'll see each other again soon in the future. I'm seeing somebody right now. or I'm not in a place to date right now, or whatever, or, wow, I can't wait. Great. You never know what you're going to get, but you got to try, right? So if a period of time has gone by, I would probably, you know, if you're a little shy, you know, and you don't want to stop by the house, or you don't know where you would run into her, I would send her another email and said, you know, I know I sent you an email. I just, you know, I'm really excited about the thought of us going out. And as well, if you're not interested, just let me know. Sincerely. And then put your name. That's what you can do. I just think, you know, I call this like the pedestal syndrome. When we like somebody, they're all the way up on top. We don't know them enough yet to know who they are, what they're doing, why they're doing it. And we just assume that everything we do is a mistake. But there are no mistakes. And this also will teach you a lot about her as well, just this process. And sometimes these become the best stories of how you guys met and how you sent an email and how she didn't respond and, you know, the whole thing. So it's just a lot of fun, but, you know, keep in touch. Let us know what happens. It's either another email or a stop by or maybe a run-in, but let us know what happens. Good luck. So I have another question from Christopher Sedgray, and he says, hello, Nadia. Christopher here with questions. If you could feed the poor, the homeless, that would be the nicest way. What would be the nicest way to do it? Would you go about giving them fresh, clean, generous restaurant experience? Wouldn't that be amazing? And what if you could feed people like that, entire families, every night of the year? Wouldn't that just be crazy? Thanks. It's hard to give. I have dealt with homeless people, and I, you know, want to take care of everybody. And I remember we had a man who lived by our house, well, lived on the streets by our house, and he was always walking around homeless, and I always wondered, you know, where does he live? And I stop and I talk to him, and, you know, I realized he's from another country, and his English is good, but he doesn't understand everything you're saying. But enough for me to, every time my kids went to go buy a sandwich, or every time my kids went to wherever at the time, this was years ago, he was my first experience. And I always made sure that they gave him as much money as their sandwich cost if he wanted to buy one. And then at Christmas, I thought, well, he's always carrying these bags around. Let me go give him a really nice backpack. So I bought him a backpack. I brought it over. I gave it to him, and he wouldn't take it. He didn't want it. He wanted the bags. He looked at it, and it almost was like when you, someone who's never had a cell phone and you gave them a cell phone, and they didn't know what to do with it, and they've never really used it, so they don't know if they'll ever use it, and they want to give it back to you. He gave it back to me. He wouldn't take it. And I thought, but look, you could carry it on your back, da, 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 because that's what I thought he needed. Never occurred to me that he was happy. Nobody's happy about being homeless, but I never thought he would be either. So then, after that happened, I was just driving down the street going to work, and he saw me, recognized me in my car, and he just smiled and waved so spontaneously that it made me cry. I started to cry in the car. And I thought, God, if I ever have more money than I need, I would make sure this man lived in a home. That's just one man. I wasn't even with a group of them. I think I would have been way overwhelmed trying to help everybody if that were the case. So then I thought, oh my gosh, you know, homeless people, they actually, and Christ wrote me about this, live in a different reality than we live in. They live in a reality that doesn't include time, that doesn't include bills, that doesn't include television, that doesn't include mail, doesn't include anything that lives in our lives that they think, oh, poor them, they're living without it. But they don't even care that they're living without it. So I started to see the world differently and through their eyes. They have no pressure of bills. They don't have any of that, but they also don't have medical care. They don't have regular food. They don't have a lot of things that are, we say, necessary to live, but yet they're living. And then my niece, when she ran away from home and we found out she had, she was bipolar disorder, number two, I think. They have it broken down, and that's what she ended up having. But she also had like those kind of the schizophrenic language. And, you know, everything now is so detailed when you get into the mental health. And she couldn't live indoors. And somehow she left Chicago and she stole the money from my sister, her mother, and she came to Santa Monica, California, always wanted to come. So she took a greyhound and came. No one could find her, and I had people looking for her in the streets, and we found her. But I told them, don't approach her. I'll come down, and at least she'll know me. And sure enough, I went once we found her, and she would not come with me and be indoors because she was concerned that if she were indoors, something could come and get her, but outdoors, she could always get away. There's no wall anything can come through. So she was having these kinds of episodes, and obviously unchecked, not medicated yet, and all of that. So she was a free fall. And I would go see her every Sunday, and she would tell me, the story is there's a whole homeless community, and they're friends. Some of them steal from each other. She goes, could you believe a homeless person stole something from another homeless person? And I'm like, well, I would believe it. It happens in every level of society. But there's also great things that happen. And she said, yeah, there's restaurants that come down on the beach, and every Wednesday night they make a whole dinner for all the homeless people, and the homeless people eat, and some of them take some of that food and eat from it for 2 or 3 days. And it is an amazing experience. And that community in Santa Monica found a way to address the issue because they have such a high homeless population in Venice, in Santa Monica area, because that beach just kind of blends into one. There's restrooms there that are clean. There's a lot of tourists, so they blend in. They put out their hats. They make some money. You know, there's like this world. So when I was talking to her, I said, but don't you miss sleeping in a bed? And I'm trying to get her here. And she says, have you ever experienced sleeping on the beach? I can't believe people go to hotel rooms. You need to sleep on the beach one day. And here she was trying to tell me how much better her life was than mine. The weirdest part was I would take her to eat at a restaurant. We'd take her, and we'd have our doggy bags, and we would be leaving. And when we're leaving, she would give her leftovers to another homeless person, even though she was homeless, even though she was full. She was good for the night. And she saw someone, and she's like, here, enjoy. And they took it. And it just blew my mind. And the weirdest part was, once I would take her to Target, and I would buy her what she needed, maybe socks, leggings, a journal. She used to like to write, and she had her backpack. That's all she needed. Very hard for us, very easy for her. And then she'd tell me where to drop her off, and she had her whole night routine. I couldn't believe it. And I realized that sometimes we decide for people what we can do and what we can't do for them or what they need, but sometimes we have to ask. Because what we think is an amazing experience may not be to them. Maybe a box of food for a family that isn't homeless but has a setup to where they can cook that food and use that food. But the realities, the sliding scale of realities is amazing. And I went to see her every single week on a Sunday for like 6 months. And then finally my sister said, I need her to come home. Because it took that long for my sister to really believe that her daughter did not have control of her own mind and to accept it. And I sent her back on a Greyhound the way she came because she didn't have any idea or anything. I had to buy her a third phone because they kept getting stolen. And they're just those little, like, the ones you buy in the drugstores that, you know, you can just basically call and get a call with prepaid minutes or something like that. And you know, I wasn't doing so great financially myself, but I was doing better than her enough to help her, and I even got people to help me help her. Some to find her, you know, hey, let's walk the streets of Santa Monica and let's find her. And we found her, and we found out that she was there at that same location every day. It's interesting. They have their habits. There's a lot of things that would be amazing, and I think that us as a world, I don't know how the rest of the world is, but where we have a set of people who live on our streets, they live on our streets. Just like it would be hard for us to do that, in some ways, transitioning people back into this life is also difficult. And it takes a lot to do it. And if there's one other charity that somebody could do, it would be to retransition people back into what we call, you know, homed life, where you live in a home. They have entire communities out here. I know when you live in really cold areas, a lot of migration comes to the west or to the south during the winters because or shelters. But I don't know if there's enough shelters, at least in California from what I see. But yes, giving them a fresh, clean, generous restaurant experience is beautiful, and they do appreciate it. I know she did. But she didn't treat it like it was any big deal. It, like, blew me away. Blew me away. Because you think, because of how we think, we're doing them a huge favor. Or gifting them. Or enjoying them. It that taught me a lot. Sometimes when, you know, like on holidays when people go and help with serving them foods and they're all together because now they're all friends. They are a community. They get to enjoy that experience with each other, and that actually means a lot to them. Even, you know, like my niece who was, you know, a little bit off, there's a little bit off in almost everyone she had met as well, but they all understood that about each other. That was very interesting. Great question. I'd forgotten about that experience. She now is doing well. She's medicated. She gets it. She gets that when she's not medicated that she's not okay. And so sometimes she'll get sick and tired of the medication, want to stop taking it, and then, boom, 3 days later she's back in that world. And now she recognizes that she is. And she works. She works. She's an extra in film. They are filming 8 different shows in Chicago, and she works on those shows. She's well-known now. People know who she is. She bounces from one show to the other. They ask for her. They took press shots for her. Her whole life changed once we actually identified the problem. And now that she's living back at home, she cannot imagine living back in the streets. She cannot. So there is a transition period, but once you transition them, they're like just like anybody else. They understand. They grow back to that understanding. Very interesting. But thank you for your question. I have a question here from Chris Kip Woods, and he says, hi, Nadia. Question, how can we separate thoughts from habits that hurt us, yet we fight hard not to let go of what hurts us. So now you're fighting for what hurts you, and that's a very conscious decision that you have to make. Like, you can't just say, oh, well, I don't want to smoke anymore, or I don't want to drink anymore, because what happens? You're going to smoke or drink again, or you don't want to swear anymore, or you don't want to eat this junk anymore, whatever it is. In the beginning, like anything else you're learning to do, when you're learning to trust yourself, when you're learning to hear yourself, you have to take yourself through it by paying attention really hard in the beginning. Once you break into the habit, you're okay. But until you break into the habit, you can always, it's like this little voice that says, oh, just take a bite. Take a bite. Oh, just do it one last time. And you have to talk back to that voice and say, no, I'm stopping now, not in an hour, not in 2 hours, not in 2 days, not in a week, now. The next thing you do, don't do it. And then the next thing you do, and that's how small you have to make it. But it, don't also hyper-focus on it. Let yourself do other things that take you away from it. So replace what you're doing that hurts yourself with something that makes you feel better about yourself, so that you at least feel that reward and, you know, your dopamine goes on. And instead of you just fighting what you can't do, add in something you can. I remember in the past, and we were just talking about this the other day, when people stop smoking, a lot of times they start eating more. Why? Because they have a hand-to-mouth habit, whether it was the smoking or whatever it was. It's a hand-to-mouth habit. So it's the hand-to-mouth habit you have to break, as well as the smoking habit. Sometimes when people break up and they text a lot and all of a sudden the texts are gone, you miss the person because you're not texting. You want somebody to text with. You have this habit. And then you realize, oh, wait, I'm not doing that anymore. Oh, wait, I'm not doing that anymore. And then you soon become used to not doing it, because the person isn't there for you to do it with anymore. Just you. You don't have anything to say, hey, you know what, I can't do that anymore. We're not together anymore. But you can break up with your habits too. Oh, I broke up with that habit. Oh, I can't do that anymore. It's hard, but you will make it. You just have to be conscious of it in the beginning. There's no other way. There isn't a magic way to break a habit other than to be conscious of what you're doing every single day in that, while you're stopping yourself in the act, even if you're halfway through breaking the habit. Even if you went as far is putting the ice cream in the dish and pouring the chocolate syrup on it, and you're ready to put the whipped cream, and you say to yourself, I'm not going to eat this. And you throw it away, or you wrap it and put it in the freezer. Maybe someone else will eat it. If the only one that lives there, throw it away and don't buy the ice cream again. At least not until you can portion yourself. Breaking habits that hurt us, believe it or not, is really hard to do. Because we also have to love ourselves enough to have the energy and the strength to fight it. Because really, it's like you and ego. Ego saying, I bet you can't, and you're saying, I bet I can. And I know that we can. I've broken habits. Not easy. Some of them bigger than others. But it's something that, unless you're conscious of it every single day until you stop thinking about it, it's going to be really hard. You guys have a great weekend. I will see you on Monday morning. That'll be the first Monday in 3 weeks. It'll be the third Monday. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to today's Daily Dose of the Nadia Khalil Morning Show. To learn more, visit www.nadiakhalil.com.